Hello and welcome to 25 Cents, a video game podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Nick. Each episode we'll be talking about the games we've tried, other games we keep going back to, and what we think might be great games to check out if you've got kids.
You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts or on the web at goodstuff.network. It's a little louder than I was intending it to be, but...
I did not hear the theme song today. Oh. So. I was just waiting for you to finish dancing.
Okay. So that explains why nobody else was dancing there. I was just doing the, oh, my ears dance. That's all I had.
Yeah, that's a different one. So how you been, Chris? Yeah, you had some kind of time off.
Time away, yeah. We took a little camping trip up northern Saskatchewan, which is, beautiful forestry, wooded country. And it happened to also coincide with quite literally the hottest week of the year, if not the decade, I think. So what's 35C in Fahrenheit is like 95 Fahrenheit, which is, yeah, just, it's hot. And we're camping. It's a tent trailer we're in. No air conditioning. You just open the windows and hope for the best. Open the screens or whatever and hope for the best at night and kind of just lay there until your body stops generating heat and long enough to fall asleep. But it was good. Good to get away. I tweeted yesterday that I hadn't actually opened up my laptop at all over the course of a week, which I don't think has ever happened over the last 3 to 5 years. Even every holiday, something comes up and nothing. No, I don't work in an industry where it's so like intense of an emergency. It's just kind of like timing and scheduling is hard for everybody involved. And so sometimes I'm editing a podcast or whatever, even if we're on holidays, and that's the benefits of working for yourself sometimes. Yeah, this was actually able to completely unplug, which is good because there's no internet, little to no internet connection anyways, even if I wanted to plug in. So but back at it, back in air conditioning, cooling off. And how's your whatever couple weeks been?
Well, we had a longer holiday weekend here for the 4th, but we didn't go anywhere. And yeah, the previous weekend we were just trying to stay cool. I think I saw British Columbia had it worse than Seattle generally in terms of temperature. You know, so it was 102 to 105 here Fahrenheit, which is, you know,
hot
a lot. Yeah, it's like 40°C, yeah, give or take. And I saw it got hot in them some places. So yeah, we were dealing with that. And it's glad we had air conditioning. Although, a nice cool breeze out camping wouldn't have been bad either. Mm-hmm. We've got some big news just dropped this morning. Should we dig into that?
Yeah, I might as well jump right in. The new Nintendo Switch was announced, which has been long rumored. I think every week it's almost been trending on Twitter that new Switch announced. And I would... My early quick reaction is that the announcement will not live up to the hype that people are hoping for with this. I don't think. I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think? I would hesitate to call it a new Switch, right? This is it's a spec bump. It's more like when the Apple laptops are just quietly refreshed with a new chipset the next year and maybe like a slightly different build to order option. I think it's a good upgrade. But it is definitely not the rumored Switch Pro, which does make me think, hey, maybe that's coming later. It does make me think that, the rumors of the Switch Pro will be the new rumors of the Apple TV upgrade for some.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a nice minor upgrade. It's still the Tegra X1 system on a chip. You can get a little more storage. It's got some enhancements to the dock. The built-in screen is bigger and now OLED, which is nice. It's a little more expensive, of course. It's got a built-in LAN port, which in the dock, which is nice. I have some weird third-party dongle on my Switch setup. I'd be curious especially with the Switch to the larger, better screen. If Nintendo has a bunch of data saying, hey, we actually have a ton of undocked mobile players, right? Like way more than the way, the Wii was really about living room play. They know that they're a huge amount of their player base is playing, these full console quality games on a tiny screen while out and about. That I kind of wonder if that's what this is saying. And so this is a tide over until whatever the next thing is.
Yeah, it's hard to know whether it's like, because I was thinking about it with, if Apple was Nintendo, they probably would have announced the Switch, the new one, at the same price point as the old one, bump this one down maybe or whatever is one scenario. Not that they haven't ever added new things on top or whatever to add to get more money out of people. But yeah, it does feel like if there's a Switch Pro on the horizon, maybe they're setting this up as like, okay, well, the Switch Pro is going to be the new Switch is like $349 now, as opposed to $299 as far as list price. So maybe the Switch Pro, they want to be able to say, well, it's $399 or $450 even or something. So like trying to get the right value up there. But it does feel weird that like the Switch has been out for 4 years, whatever it is.
4 years, basically, yeah.
Hasn't dropped in price ever. And rather than bump things down and make it more affordable for people, they're just adding a higher tier model. And yeah, like you said, I think it's a good point that there must be more, because for us, I know for our family, the mobile play, like my one son often will grab it and use it in mobile play when they do Fortnite together, but he's never, even though like my one son is playing on a 50-inch HDR TV, whatever, and he's playing on the 6.2-inch Switch screen, which to me seems like he's at a huge disadvantage relative to the bigger screen where you can see more easily. He's never complained about the screen quality or otherwise. Like he prefers the Switch format. And so for me, like if I'm budget conscious, I'm not thinking, oh, I need to get a new Switch now because it would improve his life dramatically. He's completely fine. I mean, obviously once he sees a friend with one and compares, maybe it'd be different. But yeah, like I think there must be tons of way more people using it in mobile play mode. But like I said, I think last episode, my kids don't even think of it as a thing that we take out of the house. Like it's, and maybe we've cracked down on that too much as parents saying the Switch doesn't ever leave. Don't carry the Switch around, whatever. But yeah, it's definitely not a mode that we like. They weren't even, I half joked about taking it camping and then it kind of got dropped as an even idea. Like nobody even really wanted to bring it or whatever. And so, and then, yeah, it feels like a little bit of like a funny upgrade. I guess maybe just being in the Apple world, hearing a lot about Dolby Atmos and the, what is Apple calling it? Whatever their buzzword for spatial audio.
Lossless audio or spatial audio?
Spatial audio. Like Nintendo now follows up a month later with enhanced audio. And it's just kind of like the most generic, bland version of audio feature you could describe it with. Nothing fun or exciting. It's just kind of like, we've improved the speakers a bit and now you can put fancy logos on the marketing box or whatever.
Right.
So it feels a little bit funny that way. I mean, I wouldn't expect much more from a Switch device anyways, but yeah. So I'm a little underwhelmed, I guess, and won't be rushing out to order one. I'm assuming they still have lots of or limited stock availability of Switch hardware anyways. And so they're not really worried about undercutting or cutting off price, buying the $299 model. It does seem like the $299 model isn't long for this world. If you're out there buying and for $50 more, you get a much better screen, more storage. Right. That's going to cost you money anyways.
Yeah, this feels more like a replacement in the line, right? Like it, and like you said, eventually the supply chain will trickle out and the older one will get cheaper or, you know, harder to find. And, mm-hmm. and this will be the Switch for going forward. I don't see us upgrading, for one. Like it's slightly better, but our Switch is fine. We also, you know, only got it, a year and a half ago. So we got it kind of late into the Switch period. If you don't have a Switch, it seems like you'd probably want to jump to this mm-hmm. level, especially if you think mobile is going to be your thing, you know, that the $50 is going to be worth it for these small improvements. But yeah, if you already have a Switch, I'd be, unless for some reason you decided your family needs a second one.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing an in-place upgrade.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, you sell it, I guess, and buy a new one just because you have to have the latest, greatest and stuff. But it also, I noticed in the notes somewhere that it does not, they don't guarantee that it's going to work with all the like Labo, which is like the cardboard sort of build things around the Switch because it is a bit bigger physically. And so they can't guarantee it'll work there. And also they say it's completely compatible with all games, but they also have a fine print of like things could change because it's a different screen. And so, there's obviously just, they're allowing for, I guess, just legally or whatever.
Yeah. Some game code somewhere makes some assumption about the nature of the screen and things break in weird ways for that game only. Yeah. I briefly thought about it, but as my wife said, the colors on the original Switch are better, right?
Like the physical and hardware of it, you mean?
Or yeah.
The look of it. Yeah.
And, you know, we have it docked and sitting under our TV in a visible way. So, you know, that's part of the living room decor that we have to keep looking nice.
Yeah. One other in console corner, the other game that we pulled out that I think is on Switch and multiple platforms, like PlayStation, et cetera, Steam, is a silly game called Gang Beasts. Have you heard of this?
No, I don't know this one at all.
So it was on Game Pass and I was like, oh, that looks funny. So I started downloading it. And then my son has the Xbox app on his phone. And I've now found out that he gets a notification anytime I do anything on my Xbox account. So right away he's like, hey dad, what's Gang Beasts or whatever. And then they had actually seen it in a Dude Perfect, which is a YouTube channel of guys throwing frisbees through basketball hoops and stuff. A sponsored video, I assume, of them playing Gang Beasts. And so my kids were really excited to try it. I said, no, we'll just try one game Sunday night. We just thought, well, we were back from camping. Everyone's kind of just decompressing. Try one game. Ended up playing it for like an hour and a half, almost howling the whole time. And it's just like a dumb, if you ever played Human Fall Flat, it's similar kind of mechanics of a sort of wobbly, blobby human guy that's, or person character that's running around. You can punch with one button, punch with each hand, or grab onto things and then lift them. And that's basically the mechanics of the game, and jump as well. And so you're just kind of like, we have four characters playing, and you're just trying to eliminate the other people, basically, in the most cartoony, violent way, I guess, if there's no like actual guts flying or blood spurting or whatever. And you're just kind of like these goofy characters trying to, like, on a train or on a wrestling ring or in a scaffolding in a construction site or whatever. And like to look at it, I posted on Instagram some videos and stuff. To look at it, it looks like, why are you having fun with that? But it's one of those like couch co-op games or whatever that just is fun to play. There's no huge challenge. It's all the playing field is fairly level because it's really, the mechanics of it are even so squishy that you can't really get super good at one technique or another because the characters kind of like wobble around as they run. And so you're
right. There's a lot of randomness that would overcome your attempt to develop skill. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not precise play at all. And you can customize the characters' costumes and stuff to look really silly. There's sort of like a Donald Trump looking guy or a grandma or a wrestler guy or whatever. And, and animals and things, of course.
Yeah.
And so,
and you said there's co-op or no, or it's just four on four.
Yeah. Or you can do versus two, and there's online play as well. So, which we didn't dabble in, but, it looks, it's like, I have no idea what it'll be on Switch or wherever. It was on Game Pass. So it's not a nice, like, no brainer to just try it out. But if it's like a $5 game or something, maybe it's not on Switch. It seemed like it would be perfect. I'm just looking. Steam, PlayStation 4, Xbox, Oculus, Humble Store, and Skybound. That's a physical store. So yeah, I guess not Switch. It seemed like it would be a perfect Switch game. And the graphics are very lo-fi, like nothing amazing. It's $10.99 on Steam Canadian. So
I wonder, you know, with the previous discussion on the Switch not upgrade, you know, maybe developers just don't want to deal with supporting that, you know, range of chip, even if it's a game that, you know, seems like, well, this probably can't overwhelm. But also just generally, you know, developing for multiple consoles, unless your game engine supports it really easily for you out of the box can be pretty painful. I understand any kind of cross compilation work.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm watching the Steam promo video play. And there's some techniques I'm realizing you can like jump and dive at people, which we didn't ever figure out. So anyways, we'll have to try it.
You're learning some new moves already.
Exactly. I'm just not going to tell my kids so I can do it to them.
Yeah, exactly. You have to take any advantage, you know, at our relative advanced age, right?
Yeah.
as we've talked before about how the kids are faster.
Yeah. Hashtag dad gaming. Then one other note, just Xbox Game Pass Ultimate is now available officially, I think, on iOS devices and Windows PC browsers. It's been available on Android and other platforms. And I was just trying it before we started streaming, actually playing Celeste, which is a fun platformer game that where you die a lot.
Part of that.
But the controls, like, they actually break out the games that are touch ready when you log in. So you can see all the games that have touch controls built in, which is handy. But it's a horrible interface to, like, my thumb was over top of my character half the time. And so at least for that kind of game anyways, but you can pull up like Sea of Thieves, like a modern game, on your phone and play it. in wherever you happen to be, as long as you have a decent internet connection. It still, it was giving me an error on my, which was like, what, fiber internet here, that I have internet issues or whatever. So I don't know if that's actually true or just somewhere along the path is slow internet. But
yeah, maybe the Wi-Fi to your phone was more the
yeah,
issue.
Yeah. So
now, do you have one of those little brackets so you can put your phone on your Xbox controller?
No, I don't.
And basically make it like a very heavy mobile.
I think I'll have to grab my console. Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll find one for my yellowy controller, and then I can actually. But no, it's every attempt I've made to play the Xbox game on my phone just reminds me of like, why I have a 50-inch TV downstairs. I'll just use that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's more what context would you use that in? The only other thing I had in Console Corner, I just read, so Kotaku, the video game news website, has a new editor-in-chief, Patricia Hernandez, and she wrote a long kind of opinion piece called Games Are Human and So Are We, and it's linked in the show notes. But I really like kind of the vibe of it, and it goes along a lot about what we talk about on the show about these sort of artful game experiences, right? There's one quote from her that I thought was really good, which is games are worlds unto their own, often developing not only customs, traditions, and dedicated languages, but also their own vectors of power and influence. And that's certainly something I've experienced, like back when I was heavily into World of Warcraft. You know, there was this whole culture around the game and even multiple subcultures within that culture of how, you know, different players played a game together. So just interesting to see that highlighted in the games journalism circuit, which mm-hmm. I thought was cool.
Yeah, interesting. I'll bookmark that for reading later for sure. I love the any opportunity to sort of push against the common narrative. I don't know if it still feels common amongst your peers, but just that video games are a bit of a waste of time. They're for kids. They're, you know, all that kind of language that
right.
Whatever kind of game you like, it doesn't really matter. It's kind of like something you used to do or whatever at best. And so, but yeah, definitely. When I compare it, like even with my kids, what some of the movies we experience or books even that we read and the video games we experience, it's an art, it's a world creation. It's yeah. I feel like there's certainly an element of turning off your brain and just consuming sometimes with video games, but yeah, overwhelmingly fun, positive, creative experiences, I think. So anyways, moving on. Apple Corner. What's up?
Yeah, so not a lot coming out that jumped out at me on Apple Arcade. As I think I mentioned last episode, I did Game Dev Story Plus came out, and I grabbed it and installed it. So I think I actually have the previous game on some device, or maybe I didn't install it on this phone, but started over. And you know, it's that, you know, formulaic sim, right? Like you figure out the right combination of choices and apply some bonuses, and then that earns you money, which lets you unlock new upgrades and new workers, and then you can you just kind of keep leveling up. It's just that flywheel. You know, it's relaxing, it's enjoyable. I played a fair bit of it the week before last, and was making progress, making up silly video games. Fantasy RPG turned out to be the sweet spot where I seem to make the most money on the fake pretend consoles in the game.
And that is the goal of the game. Like there's no deeper message beyond like trying to get rich with games.
Yeah, you're just trying to be the best video game company. I think you're at least the one of the big goal is to win the game of the year, which I haven't done yet. And I think requires getting like all 10s from all the critics, as well as sales above a certain threshold and some stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's fun. It's got this kind of pixel art style. So it kind of looks like maybe a Game Boy Color era game, like maybe one of the older Pokemon games or something, the way the menus are laid out and stuff. Like I said, played it before and it's, you know, free for me to play it again. And as I think I heard, that we talked about a few episodes back, you know, if you want to support the developer of one of these plus reissued games under Arcade, but you already have the old game, playing it under Arcade is good for them somehow. So, right. So noting that here, there's an advantage to the developer to to get that, whatever their share of that subscription revenue is.
Yeah, that's where the pennies that they make each time you play or something, it would be fascinating to hear how that compares with the advertising revenue they make off junk ads in the regular game. I'm just noticing your next one was Solitaire Stories. I happen to be looking at the Apple Arcade Store or whatever you call it on my iPhone, and the top arcade games right now in the Apple App Store are Solitaire, a different one, and then Solitaire Stories, and then NBA 2K21. Just like this weird, I was thinking like Solitaire Stories seems like the perfect game, gateway game for a lot of like, especially boomer type, but even anybody who likes more relaxing games, like it's a, mm-hmm. everyone loves a good solitaire game. And that's an easy one to like explain or link to someone. Like I could see linking to my dad to it or whatever and saying, hey, you're looking for a good solitaire game. Here's one. And you just have to subscribe to the service or whatever. And he'd probably do it without having to worry about all the other games that are there. But what's Solitaire Stories like? I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, so it's Solitaire. As far as I can tell, there's only what most people call Solitaire, which is Klondike rules, right? So the seven stacks, trying to build up ace to king on four foundations while flipping through the deck. The story element is, so there's quick play where you are just dropping in and playing rounds of solitaire the usual way. The story mode is that there's kind of these little vignettes where each round of solitaire you're playing like kind of advances the story a little bit. Like the first story is you finding every free moment at the office to play solitaire, which is kind of the classic, you know, Windows 3.1 yeah. Solitaire use case, right? You hide it behind your spreadsheet or whatever.
You're either Solitaire or Minesweeper, depending on which
team. Yeah, exactly. So the vignettes are mildly interesting. I would not say it's really a story. I haven't gotten very far into it. So it hasn't grabbed me in that way. And, you know, I think of like the old Solitaire mobile game that I've had for years on my phone, which I think is still supported, you know, that has like 40 different solitaire rule sets, you know, spider and all these other things, right? Yukon, demon, you know, there's many, many different rules for playing solitaire with a standard deck of cards. And this one just has the one. So I don't think this is going to be the place where I play solitaire. Maybe I'll play through the story mode, but yeah, for quick play, I would go to another game, I think. The graphics are kind of interesting. A couple of the deck designs, I actually found it a little harder to read. You know, and certainly I can see how you know, it could be fun to unlock these different decks to play with, but yeah, I definitely settle in on the one that I like the look of the most. The other thing too, and this is, you know, I don't know, we could rehash the Dark Souls type gaming argument of games should be hard to play, right? But in the context of solitaire, I always grew up playing three card flip, which is, you know, you have to think strategically. Okay, right. If I take this card out lower in my deck, when I flip over, it's going to change the order of the rest of the deck, and I'm going to get access to different cards. And I've always thought that, or I was always thinking of that as what Klondike is, what Solitaire is. But a lot of the digital versions either start out or allow you to switch to the single card flip, which means you're guaranteed to see every card in the deck, and it's a much easier game. So I feel like I had a little bit of that like purist reaction or whatever, where it's like, wait, this is the easy mode. This isn't how you're supposed to play this game. So I had to knock some sense into myself there. And certainly the single card flip is much more enjoyable for someone like my son. And he's played a little bit of it. I taught him in person, like physical solitaire with a deck of cards several months ago. But yeah, and I think there's some interesting games that are coming up soon. Many of them in the sort of plus or sequel area, which is interesting. It, you know, kind of maybe tells us a little bit about where Apple sees the sort of risk trade-off. You know, they want that library of predictable games. You know, people come in, see Arcade, and see like, oh, here's a bunch of games that I already know and love, or games like ones I know and love,
yeah,
with recognizable brands.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, it's following like the movie world of, you know, sequels are less expensive to make and much more easy to market because you have to convince someone of the characters or whatever, and why they just pump out sequel after sequel in various worlds of movies and Fast and the Furious 9, for example, or whatever.
Yeah.
The one other game I tried over while we were camping, I just picked it up. I think I downloaded it before we left because it would have taken an hour to download, but on the cellular service we had there. But it was Leo's Fortune, which is like, I was looking back. It's actually from 2014. It's when it won the Worldwide Developer Conference Apple Design Awards for it. So it's quite an older game, 7 years now. But if you've never played it, it's just like, kind of like a platformer, but the character slides along and you can kind of jump is basically your only option and manipulate the world that way. And the puzzles and stuff and sort of the platform, that world that they have created for it is interesting enough, I guess, to me that it's and fun enough to play on a, like even an iPhone style screen, size screen, that I wasn't feeling like I needed to wait for like an iPad or even Apple TV to play this. And it's nice, colorful kind of world that you're in. I don't know. Did you ever play this back in the day at all?
No, you know, I saw this one coming and I don't even remember hearing about it then. So I don't know. I mean, it's let's see. That would have been right shortly after my son was born. So I was certainly doing my fair share of mobile gaming while holding an upset baby at various points in there. But yeah, I miss this one. So yeah, I'll probably try it out. This seems like one that might be good on the Apple TV.
It would. Yeah. And definitely like I could see like your son playing it while you're, you know, working on the side or whatever and sort of helping him with some puzzles maybe or whatever that he gets stuck on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a very fun kind of platformer and easy to play. Like the puzzles, at least I think I played through 3 or 4 or 5 levels and nothing too difficult as far as how to figure out. But there's a few times where you're kind of like, there's the physics. You have to work out what exactly where you should land to push a thing up and or set off a bumper or whatever. And so it's a fun little one to pick up. And again, one of those things where Apple Arcade is great because you just could get, I never tried this game out. I don't really remember the icon for it is like a fuzzy ball looking mustache guy.
He's got like a big gray mustache, right? Or
yeah.
Like a prospector mustache or something.
With big eyes and kind of, it looks like it doesn't look like the game is what it is, I guess maybe. And so just to recommend it to folks as a fun little platformer to pull up if you've got Arcade already. So
yeah, I'll have to check that one out before our next episode. So kind of, thinking of that, of these older games, you know, now that iOS as a platform for apps and games has been around for over 10 years, are there any old games that you'd like to see get the plus treatment? And maybe in particular, a game that, you know, is no longer available because as the platform has marched on, you know, if a developer isn't actively updating a game, it won't work.
Yeah, that's where I think, like, I was actually thinking of one of the first games I really got into was, I think it was called Test Flight or Flight. It was like you had to guide planes to the...
It's funny. That is literally exactly the one I was thinking of when I prompted this question. Flight Control.
Flight Control. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife was talking about it the other day about, like, oh, that was a really great game and you can't get it anywhere anymore. I think it was an iPad launch game. So when the original iPad came out, it was like one of the first games for iPad. And yeah, I played a ton of that. I would love to see that one come back as a plus game.
Yeah, I was just looking at Wikipedia here. Firemint was the developer. I remember I can totally picture the branding on it, loading or whatever. And it was released in 2009 and sold over 3.8 million copies. So they made their money for sure. And then was removed from the store in 2015, although it remains for sale on Android, according to Wikipedia. So whether that's been updated or not, who knows? But yeah, that would be definitely, I guess, they got bought by EA, Electronic Arts. So probably never going to happen.
I mean, there have been some EA games in Arcade, right? Like, NBA one, right?
But I was thinking, like, in terms of the plus stuff that where they reissue old games, Apple's seeming to gone to like indie developers and said, hey, what about your game that we could, you know, repackage and resell or whatever as part of this. And so this seems like less likely to go that route, but you never know. So maybe just by us recording a podcast, we'll speak it into existence.
Yes, let's speak the words into action. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that would definitely be the big one.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's any other ones that I played like a ton of. I know the very first iOS game that I purchased was Trism, and that's still supported. The developer has put out like tiny little patches to keep it alive over the years. I'm trying to think what, you know, another game that I like sank a lot of time into that's not available anymore, but nothing else comes to mind other than Flight Control.
All right. So moving on, do you have some, we played a little bit in Tabletop Corner. We played a little bit on the, my kids, like I think I said just last episode, we got the Exploding Kittens. And so that was played a bit, even at the beach. It's like, I was kind of nervous, like card games at a beach where the wind blows and the game cards go flying. And but managed to hold off the wind and they played okay. And even at the campsite, played some Carcassonne on a wobbly picnic table, which is always kind of fun, trying to make sure the pieces stay lined up with kids. It's tough enough with kids at the best of times, but then, yeah, a wobbly, uneven picnic table. So that's what we kind of pulled out, those ones. And then, there's one other one, Queen. It'll
Sleeping Queens?
We have that one. That's not the one. I was going to say that one, but it's not what we played. The one where you, I know my wife and my son played the Desert Sky one. No, the... my brain is not functioning yet. The one where you're like trying to stave off, you have to have enough water and you're...
Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert.
Forbidden Desert, that's the one. Which always is like, it's a tense game to watch my family play. For whatever reason, I don't always end up playing it, but it's like these tense negotiations about what everyone should be doing. And one of my kids likes to try to control the game. So we're teaching him about, letting others make mistakes sometimes to learn. How about you? What have you been playing?
Yeah, just a few recurring ones. Flinch is a good one. That was one that I had grown up playing a lot of. So that's it's not a standard card deck game, but it's a pretty old game. I think it's from the early 1900s, where you're just trying to build up stacks from 1 to 15. And we have a set now as well. Villainous. So. Yeah, that's the Disney one. I think there's also a Marvel Villainous, as well as a couple of expansions that add additional villains. I really like that one, and it works pretty well with two player. So like if just my son and I are playing, that's one where he's still learning some of the strategy parts of it. Like, how do I actually use all my actions on the turn in the best possible way? But it's still fun to play, and the art is cool. And then, Cloud City, which was a newer acquisition. I think I mentioned a couple episodes ago where you're just kind of building up a city and scoring points for your buildings and sky bridges. And that's a fun one, too, and pretty quick. That's kind of our loop. Certainly one of many ways we were staying inside and staying cool was with some games on the first floor where it's a little darker and cooler.
It's such a weird world we're in right now with especially up here, but I'm sure even there too, like where winter is when normally you'd play board games and stuff because it's too cold to go outside and do stuff. But now with this heat, it's like we can't go outside. So let's hide in the basement and play board games.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what do you have this is maybe a bigger question than we can answer in 2 minutes or less, but like do you have a strategy as far as budgeting for board games? Because like I just see all these three games you listed right now, all are games that I would like, that would be great to play and we should buy them, and then think of like the stack of games that we have already and trying to like balance which game do you buy, how much do you spend per month or per year on board games, or is it kind of like I do a lot of that with video games where I think about the value and the worth of it, but board games I tend to just kind of buy on a whim and it doesn't sort of enter that same budget line on my
I think the riskier category is the board game Kickstarters, which I both hear about a lot about because of like who I talk to and who I follow. And because that's most of what I've backed on Kickstarter, that's what all the recommendation engine gives me is like, here's another new, board game or RPG. So that's probably the trickier one because you kind of don't know what you're going to get. And it's like, and also if you've ever Kickstarted one thing, that game maker will like email you for their next Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I keep getting these notifications like, hey, our next game is going to be on Kickstarter, right? So I think that's the trickier one because it's more unknown. And I mean, if you want to, you can choose to drop a lot on the Kickstarter reward levels beyond just the physical game copy. I would say our biggest way of doing it is trying very hard to try games first at the game store up the hill. Mm. Unfortunately, that has not been possible for the last year and a half.
Yeah.
I know I saw one of the other game stores just opened up their in-person game library. I don't think the one near us has yet, but the county restrictions are such that they could if they are willing to. And that's where we would try the game first before we buy. Honestly, probably our best limitation is the fact that our IKEA Kallax for games is nearly full. And so we're kind of at the, if one comes in, one needs to go. And right. So if we don't have in mind one that we'd be willing to retire or part with or pass on to family or Goodwill or whatever, then we're going to think long and hard before acquiring a new game.
That's a good approach to it. Yeah, that's, I think having expanded now to a slightly bigger house and more storage space as a result, obviously, probably is not working in our favor in that area where
the games that can be dangerous
in the basement kind of just pile up, and then we have a few that we keep upstairs on the main floor that we're actually actively playing, and kind of forget about the ones that pile up in the basement. But yeah,
I would say it's been during the pandemic, the Lego budget has been the more challenging to manage one. Again, another good indoor family activity where you don't really want to risk going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. That's, my kids just recently went through some birthday money and are ordering Lego. I'm supposed to order some from Lego.com that we can't get anymore. And my oldest is trying to collect Harry Potter sets that aren't around as easily here. So that's definitely on the mind on our, but yes, so fun times. All right. Well, anything else we need to cover before we wrap up this time?
No, I don't think so. Some interesting news and you know, as always, let us know what games you've been playing.
Yeah, curious what board games especially, or video games too, in the summer here, whatever you're pulling out. What do you take camping or anything? Do you bring the whole Settlers of Catan and risk losing the pieces in the dirt, or do you just bring a travel version of games and then relegate them to a very locked container and hermetically sealed tents that you allow games in or whatever? I'm curious how you game in the summer anyways, and outdoors and stuff as you try.
Outdoor gaming, that's a good one.
So maybe we'll try and think of cover some of that in the future episodes here too this summer. But in the meantime, thank you for listening to 25 Cents, our video game podcast. You can find me on Twitter again now at iChris.
And you can find me on Twitter and most everywhere else as Ultra Nerd. That's NURD.
And you can find 25 Cents wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to check out the Good Stuff Patreon, patreon.com/goodstuff. Join us in the Discord where we're chatting about games and other fun stuff. And then, like we said before, there's the Good Stuff Morning Show is back 2 times a week. They're publishing new episodes, much to my son's delight. It's a weird show where, like, I know there's other people who listen, but it's my son, 14-year-old now son, loves it. He's howling listening to the show, even while, like, he asked to hotspot while we're driving back from camping because he knew there was a new episode that he hadn't listened to yet. And so he's putting me as creator of Good Stuff to shame with his enthusiasm for Good Stuff shows. So definitely check that out. And then the other one actually that is, I just wanted to make sure it's actually working because I tested it yesterday, but I'm pretty sure it's, there's Click and Flick, which is a new podcast coming to Good Stuff that is, the trailer is out, and basically video games and movies. They take one video game and one movie, review it, two friends talking through video games and movies. And so good crossover episode, maybe down the road for 25 Cent fans. I think the first episode is coming out this month here for sure, but the trailer's there, goodstuff.network/clickandflick. And of course, wherever you find podcasts, you can find it, Click and Flick, if you search for that.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that one. I'll be curious to see what they cover on the show.
And just in the interest of family friendliness, slightly less so in terms of language, you know, flowing a little more freely that way. Nick and I haven't had opportunity to get so angry or so enthused, I guess, that we've dropped some F-bombs or whatever. My son was actually asking, he doesn't subscribe yet to this show. He's like, should I listen to that, Dad? Is it okay or whatever? Is it good? And I was like, I don't know if it's good because I'm on it, but it's definitely safe to listen to.
That's well. My 7-year-old will sometimes request to listen to our latest episode at bath time. So, oh, nice.
Well, have a fun bath if you're out there listening right now, whenever this is in the future.
Don't forget the bubbles.
Yeah. And don't forget to let your dad win sometimes. So, all right. On that note, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next time. Bye.
Bye.